You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, morning. Hello. Hello, everybody. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. Hope this is... Well, it's an interesting day, man. We do have the Seahawks. I promise there will be a lot of Seahawks conversation this morning. We will talk Pete Carroll, and I don't know what Larry Stone's going to say today. I mean, last week, you know, he was out on a limb. Like, Larry's hot take guy, as we know, right? Big hot take columnist for the Times. And Larry said last week felt like the end of an era. What does this week feel like if that was the end of an era? Just like ghost zombie walking through? Because in some ways, this felt worse. I mean, you know, to go to Washington and... you know, have so little offensively. They looked worse offensively in this game than in the Green Bay game when they got shut out.
The Larry Stone thermometer, is that what we're calling it now?
Maybe, yes. It's the hot
take.
Take
the temperature on
the hot take thermometer.
What's next?
I love Larry. He's the best, man. And he didn't need to write anything today because he said it right last week. And what you saw last night was more of it. And look, we're going to play some of this Pete Carroll sound. I don't know if it's finger pointing or what, but it feels like the things are... maybe starting to unravel offensively, and such a shame because of what you saw defensively. It's one of the better defensive outings they've had all year. I mean, they really played pretty darn well against Washington and kept them, you know, kept their offense. It was only a one-score game, and then, honestly, a two-point conversion away from tying it in the final seconds. So, yeah, just a bizarre one. Thankfully, we have much better news to talk about this morning. Robbie Ray coming to Seattle. This is awesome, right?
Yes. Mariners.
What a
thank
savior.
You for sure. Yes. It's like Jerry playing the role of Paul Sewald, stepping in for the save to make sure we're happy and sunshine and puppies this morning. But look, Robbie Ray is legit. Let's just start with that. He is legit. It is a very good signing. It is a really good contract. $23 million a year for 5 years is a very good deal for a 30-year-old
Cy Young winner.
Yeah, and by the way, he has an opt-out after 3 years. If he opts out, it's an even better deal. I mean, you're getting him. He's 30, right? So you're getting him for ages 30, 31, 32 for sure. That's like the prime of his career, right? That's not overpaying at that rate. And then if he sticks around for two more, you get ages 33 and 34, not 37 and 38. That's a really big difference. And you think about the fact that, you know, we heard yesterday the Mariners offered 5 years to Marcus Semien. Okay, well, he went for seven. He's what, 31? So those are his ages 37 and 38 seasons that they were unwilling to pay for. Look, do I think they should have done it? Probably. I think they probably should. If he was their number one target, you probably should have. Yeah, I think so what? So you eat an extra $50 million. Tough. Like, to me, that is the money you saved in the past. Go spend it now and say, hey, that's the money we saved on Cano. Instead, we blew it on Semien. Okay. I think they should have tried to match, if not beat that. But, okay, they didn't want to do that. This is a really good deal for a guy that misses a ton of bats. Like, he will strike you out. That is the one thing you can guarantee about Robbie Ray. He comes in to strike you out. Some of the numbers that you've heard, and these will be all over the place, the most strikeouts to start a career, first 1,000 innings of anyone in history.
Jeez. Wow. And he chews up a ton of innings.
More than Pedro, more than Felix, more than Randy Johnson, more than Nolan Ryan, more than Roger Clemens. Now, those guys pitched 1,000 innings in like their first 4 or 5 years. He did it in like his first seven. Like, it took a while for him to get going, but it's just a tremendous number of strikeouts in the career for Robbie Ray, and he led the league last year with, like, 250, just under that. So the strikeout numbers are enormous. He had a little bit of a slow start to his career, came up from Arizona, or I think originally in Detroit and then Arizona, and it wasn't until he got to Toronto that he seemed to just kind of figure something out. I guess he made some tweaks to his delivery. Whatever it is, it worked. He was the best pitcher in the American League last year. Now, maybe not by leaps and bounds, but, you know, along with Shohei Ohtani, he was one of the two best pitchers in the league for sure and really had a great deal. So for him to come here, I think is awesome. He immediately slots in atop your rotation. I don't know if he starts opening day or not, or if you just kind of throw Marco some respect based on what he's done here the last few days. But, you know, Robbie Ray, Marco Gonzalez, Logan Gilbert, Chris Flexen, that's your top four.
Well, think about, too, the lineups he's going to be throwing against. Look who he's used to throwing against now. Like, yeah. He's been pitching against the Yankees and
he's been
Rays
in the AL East.
And, yeah, like, I know the Rangers and I know the Astros are going to be tough to throw against, but at least he comes in with that experience.
Hey, that's a really good point. The AL West may end up being the AL East when all is said and done here, yeah. And all the money that's being spent in this division. But, yeah, so that's going to be your front four. What do you do with your fifth spot? I think there's a couple of ideas. First of all, I would go after another premier starter. Castillo? I just want to be clear. Huh?
Castillo?
I'm totally down with any of the Reds or A's starters that are out there, whether it's at the top of the list like Manaea or Castillo, or if there's somebody maybe a little bit farther down on one of those teams' depth charts. I don't think you can ever have enough pitching. As a last resort, and I'm sure that he's not like signing immediately, so this is an option open to you, a reunion with Tyler Anderson. Right? Bring him back for another couple of years. I thought he pitched really well down the stretch for the Mariners.
Yeah, he did.
You know, just he's a fifth starter kind of guy, and that gives you some of the depth that you need as you're waiting for Brash and Kirby and Williamson, all of which are likely to pitch in the big leagues this year. Sterling Hancock is a possibility at some point this year. You still have Dunn. Maybe he bounces back. You still have Mark Gavishus. He bounces back. So, yeah, I think you have some depth, but there is nothing more important to contending than pitching depth and pitching health, and they obviously work together.
Paxton, anywhere in this? Would you try? I mean, it's depth. I know he's not really
it's
longevity.
Look, if they're a one-year prove-it
discount,
deal, maybe,
yeah.
You know, at the major league minimum or something like that. I don't think you need to take that kind of chance right now if you're the Mariners. Just because you know James Paxton doesn't mean he needs to be the guy.
Yeah.
Like, there are other options out there. But, yeah, I do. You can never have enough. If you want to throw James Paxton at the end of that, that's fine with me. Start with your four that you know. I would add a fifth. I would be perfectly content if after this they still ended up getting a one of these other starters from the A's or Reds we were talking about and got Tyler Anderson.
Yeah.
And, sure, sign a James Paxton for the minimum and have Dunn and have Mark Gavishus and have your double-A guys.
Yeah, because I'm worried about those double-A guys you said being trade pieces.
Well, or that, yes, some of them, for sure, if you do end up going with one of those deals, yes. Or you know, they don't all pan out.
True.
And they might not, and certainly not
exactly.
As a rookie. Do you want to be counting on rookies in a year where you're now trying to contend?
We've done that.
You want to try to slide them in and see how it works. And you know you're going to need at least 8, if not 12, starting pitchers to get through a year. At least 8, maybe 12, maybe more.
Maybe Sheffield turns out.
Well, let's not get carried away. Come on. Early in the morning.
Sheffield could be my
Rashad early in the
Penny
morning.
Here.
He was mine. I really thought you were going to get a good year from him. So, you know, that's where you're at right now for the Mariners and their rotation. All of a sudden, it looks much, much better. And now you got to go turn your attention to go get a bat. I believe Robbie Ray was their top pitching target. I don't know if he was their top target. I think they're obviously their top guy that they wanted was Semien, and it didn't work out. So, okay. So now that you didn't get that, what are you going to do? You still have the need. You need some pop. You need something in your infield. So is it Story? Is it Bryant? It sounds like Baez maybe is moving towards Detroit, so that maybe that's not – which is fine, by the way. Of all the options, that was the one I was interested in the least. Maybe it's Matt Chapman still. We've talked about him from the A's. It sure seems like the A's are waiting. Like, just not quite – they're kind of, we'll see what we're going to do, and we're going to kind of hold on. And maybe they're waiting for people to be left out here in the musical chairs and then say, hey – if you got left out, we've got such and such, and yeah, we're going to jack up
price
the price because of it. Yeah. So, look, you want to finish off an offseason right for me? Here's what you do. You go trade for a pitcher, right? Another good starting pitcher. Sign a back-end starter like a Tyler Anderson. Sign one of these guys. Let's say it's Trevor Story or Chris Bryant. I know that's not, like, easy, but yeah, do that. And then go get a Michael Conforto to add a little depth to your lineup. Yeah, now you're talking about a team that is legitimately better than you were last year, contending for the playoffs, and maybe beyond that. So, yeah, I think they've got a lot left to do and a lot of opportunity to go do it. Today's the day. So, like, you know, go seize it, Jerry. Go seize it. All right, coming up next here, we will tell you everything you know. Yesterday has to be one of the busiest and biggest days of sports news I can remember in Seattle. We'll get you caught up on all of it next. It is the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
What's going on with the Seahawks? four things all happening at the same time, most of them not good. We'll discuss coming up here in 15 minutes. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. There's even a small chance we may get Pete Carroll early just due to their schedule. Obviously, 9:30 is our time for Pete. There is a shot we may have here in about 15 minutes, and if that's the case, we'll obviously take Pete and talk to him then as well. Right now, though, it's 6:15. It's time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
What did we all watch last night? What was that? Somehow the Seahawks managed two touchdowns in the game, but that was not an NFL offense, let alone one that features an elite franchise quarterback and some of the best weaponry in the league. That was not good. Seahawks lose 17-15 in Washington. Fall to just 3-8 now on the year. They've lost three straight, 6 of 7. The result was one thing, but the way things looked, quite another. We've seen the Seahawks get dominated by a defensive line that just suffocates them with pressure, right? We've seen it with the Rams. We've seen it with the Packers. Those stand out. We've also seen them hurt themselves, self-inflicted wounds, penalties, substitution issues, etc. But I don't think I've ever seen them look so completely and totally lost as they did last night. So completely without answers. This one was different. It felt like so much of it fell on a coaching staff that couldn't design an offense capable of getting the ball to its playmakers, and on a quarterback that couldn't choose the open receiver and then often missed high and wide when he did. It was foundation-shaking, honestly, to see Russell Wilson look like that. That's not the Russell we've watched for the last decade. And while his finger injury and new offensive scheme are clearly part of the problem, they just don't quite explain all of it. Pete Carroll on the passing game.
Film doesn't lie, you know. We're missing some stuff. I don't see indications of that in practice as we're going. And so we just got to look at the film, you know. We can talk about all the different throws that didn't get where they're supposed to go, but I don't know what to make of it other than the fact we got to keep battling and keep trying to figure it out. I felt like we had some guys open tonight, you know, with some chances, and unfortunately we didn't hook it up.
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone knows for sure what we're watching and why it's turned so far south, but it doesn't look like the show we've watched for a decade now, and it's near impossible to imagine all the major characters returning for another sequel.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Welcome to Seattle, Robbie Ray. The Mariners did more than just dip their toe into the free agent waters yesterday. They signed the reigning AL Cy Young Award winner and get their top pitching target to a 5-year deal worth $115 million. Ray gets an opt-out after 3 years and a no-trade clause for the first two. Just turned 30, so this deal would cover his ages 30 through 34 seasons. Likely to be pretty good years for a pitcher of that caliber, and that is awfully high. He's always been solid, but last year really saw him make some mechanical changes. They worked for him, led the league with a 2.84 ERA, 248 strikeouts, and a whip just over one. Pretty staggering numbers, and they should make him the team's top starter, whether he gets the ball on opening day or not. Dan Plesac sure liked this one as he talked on MLB Network yesterday.
This is a great move for the Mariners, who now I really think are a contender in the American League West. I really think they're a team that's going to make an impact.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised to see their first major deal go to a pitcher. My read on DePoto was that he would prefer to stay away from longer-term deals to older pitchers. But, you know, in this case, 5 years is manageable. He's a lefty. They tend to age better. And they got the money to spend. So, yeah, why not? There's not as much to not like here. Ray's proven. He misses bats. He's shown to be a legitimate frontline starter. Not only does he give them what they need right now, but he also provides that bridge you're looking for as you wait to find out what your minor league guys are, right? So your rotation will be Ray, Marco, Logan Gilbert, Chris Flexen, and then a battle on for the final spot. That could include George Kirby, Matt Brash, plenty of others as well. And I don't think the Mariners are done. Not at all. Their payroll for next season remains under $80 million. They've been linked to some big bats like Chris Bryant as well, a guy that they targeted at the deadline last year. And then the A's still haven't started dealing either. So still plenty of options out there for the Mariners. Javier Baez will not be an option. Sounds like the shortstop has just signed moments ago with Detroit.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Oh, welcome to Seattle, Kalen DeBoer as well. Officially the newest head coach of the University of Washington, signing a deal yesterday with a press conference later this morning. Offensive-minded guy. He had great success as the head coach at Fresno State, specifically turning around the career of UW cast-off Jake Haener. Before that, he was the OC at Indiana, where they had some success, and now he'll be charged with restoring respect on Montlake, not to mention installing a modern offense that would entice Sam Heward and others to stick around, and then building a recruiting base that right now has fallen on very hard times. Only time will tell if this was the right hire, Obviously, he's got some impressive skills, but while Oregon plays for the Pac-12 title and USC hires Lincoln Riley, there's no doubt that DeBoer is just not as splashy or as proven. Kraken get another road win last night, this time 7-4 over Buffalo. Two goal nights for Jared McCann and Mason Appleton. Tanev, Soucy, Schwartz all pitching in as well. A couple straight starts now and two straight wins for Chris Drieger. Congrats to him. They will be in Detroit tomorrow. It's everything you need to know, and we'll tell it to you quarter past every hour.
So are refs in the NHL allowed to have a little bit more flexibility and freedom with their choice of words?
How funny was that? Can you imagine if that happened in the NFL, the scandal it would cause?
That's what I thought. My very first reaction was like, oh, that guy's about to get fired.
Yeah, no, not at all. So if you're watching the NHL game, if you're watching the Kraken last night, there's a penalty. Hayden Fleury, right, took a holding penalty kind of behind his own goal. He was not wild about the call. Don't blame him. And you can kind of hear Fleury caught on mic saying, ah, it's a bad call, and maybe drops a curse word or two. And
the expected. It's a player.
Yeah, well, and then the ref has to go over it. I love the way the ref makes the call. Like, in general, I love it. The ref comes over, is like, makes the hand motion. Every call in hockey has a hand motion, kind of like in the NFL, right? So I love the way they do that. And so he comes over, and it's just like, yeah, number four, holding, 2 minute minor, right? But his mic's still on, and he clearly like has heard Fleury continue to complain, and he looks over at him and curses at him twice, like a ball. He drops an F-bomb at him twice. And not like in general, like at him. Yeah. Like you, right? You the was way, the next
the way you would do it to somebody who just cut you off in traffic.
Yes. And then he just kind of skates off, looks furious. I thought it was great.
I think there are a lot more hockey refs that actually played.
Yes.
Like NFL refs, a lot of them are like lawyers for their day jobs. So I don't know if that has anything to do with a little more leeway there.
Do you remember Mike Carey, the NFL ref?
Yeah.
Do you know what his job was, his full-time job?
Will we guess it?
No.
Okay, no.
He was an inventor.
Oh, that's cool. That's nice. Pretty cool.
Isn't that awesome?
I'll allow that.
Mike Carey was an inventor. Yeah, Ed Hockley was a lawyer. Yeah, so
strength coach.
Yes, obviously. So yeah, you do see that often in the NFL. But in hockey, you have to be able to skate well enough to ref the game. So yeah, a lot of those guys played minor leagues or to some significant level. They're not like completely different from the players who are out there.
Right.
I love them going back and forth. I thought that was a highlight. Yes,
I just expected,
and a nice win for the Kraken, by the way.
Huge. I was just gonna say that's what goes to next, right? Now we gotta go to Detroit.
Detroit, yeah.
Which is
Hockey Town USA right there.
What are they, 10-9, I think?
Yeah, they've been kind of
middle of their division.
Yeah, kind of middle of the pack. Kraken are playing better hockey. I'll tell you what, a week or two ago, I didn't know that it was going to go this way with kind of the mess with Grubauer and Hakstol. And you know what? They've given credit. Give Hakstol credit. He's gotten them kind of turned around, playing better hockey. I still don't love some of the line combinations, but that's okay. I'll keep myself quiet over here.
And we're no longer in last place.
While they're winning. Yeah, I'll just keep my... I don't need to take any more L's. I certainly have plenty to take an hour from now.
Take the L is kind of Salk themed today.
Yeah, it sure seems to be. Apparently, I'm like L-man. Just a big loser.
Getting some help, too, on Twitter. That was nice.
No sign of Pete yet, right? Okay, there's a chance we'll talk to Pete. I don't think it's going to happen. It's probably going to happen at 9:30, but just kind of heads up in case it does. In the meantime, four parallel stories that I think completely tell us what's going on with the Seahawks. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to like the story it tells. It's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, what ails the Seahawks? A lot, obviously. I mean, 3-8. This is not what we've come to expect. It's nowhere close. The offense last night was embarrassing. And I don't say that like with anger or malice or anything like that. It's just hard to watch. Like that was an embarrassing offensive effort that somehow managed to lead to a couple of touchdowns, one in the final moments of the game in the 2 minute drill, one when they were able to just hit on a big play. And other than that, essentially inept for the rest of that game. It's just, it's not what you expect when you're watching Russell Wilson. And so, you know, as I watch it, I'm trying to figure out what's going on with this team, what's wrong with them, and where you go from here. We have had, I don't know how many months of debate about talent, about scheme, about coaching, about quarterback play, about philosophy, about identity, about drafting, about free agency. And generally when we have those debates, everyone takes a side, right?
You pick your corner?
Yeah. What side are you on? Do you think it's Russell's fault or do you think it's Pete's fault? Do you think it's a talent issue or do you think it's a scheme issue? And I've obviously participated in those conversations, built them myself. As you're trying to assign blame, you're trying to figure out, not because you're looking for a pound of flesh, because you're looking to figure out what needs to get fixed in order to get back right. to seeing what you expect to see. It's not out of anger or revenge. It's just out of how do you fix this, right? As a fan, this is, you know, I get on a side tangent about fans who never want to criticize their team. The reason you criticize your team is not because you don't like them or you don't support them. It's because you want that part of what they do to get better so that you can get to your ultimate goal, which is watching them win another championship. That's what fans want. But as I watched them last night, it dawns on me that we don't need to keep having this conversation. We don't need to keep trying to figure out which thing is the biggest part of the problem. The way I see it, four things are happening at once with the Seahawks. One of them's okay. Three of them are not. Okay?
Okay.
Four things. I'll start with the one that's okay. It's good.
So you're trying to say it's all the problem?
No, number one, the team is fighting as hard as they can. Legitimately. Yeah. I see a team that has not quit on their coach, that has not quit on at all. The defense was scrapping, surviving last night. The offense finding a way to get the ball down the field, special teams making one huge play, nearly made two others
right.
on the onside kick, other than the bonehead not lining up in the right spot. That's a coaching mistake also. I see a coaching staff led by Pete Carroll that knows how to motivate and knows how to lead. And in the NFL, that's not nothing. That means quite a bit. There is unbelievable leadership at the top of this organization, and it permeates through these games. Why are the Seahawks able to nearly pull off a come from behind, tie it up, and maybe even win it in a game like that? Coaching, right? So that's the positive side of this, and it sounds like we may talk to Pete here in just a minute or two. The second part of it is I see a team that's often outmatched, a team that's just missed too often in the draft, that doesn't really have an outstanding talent at any position other than wide receiver and quarterback in general, but obviously what we're seeing from Russ right now is not the norm.
Right.
Number three, a scheme that's not good. It's in between. It's not NFL quality. It's not, offensively. What we're seeing with this offense, that's not the way NFL offenses look. And yeah, some of it is the fault of the scheme and the play calling and just all of that. They are in between identity-wise. They don't seem to know what to do in big moments. The play call they made on their two-point conversion, what was that?
To Swain?
Yeah, just all of that just was looked wrong. It didn't look like what you see these days in the NFL where teams have something cooked up for a moment like that. And instead, it was just like a straight-up drop-back pass with Russ. Like, I don't get it. It doesn't take advantage of his best skills, especially in this game. Let him run around. Let him move. Let him be Russell. So you got problems there. So you've got a team fighting hard. You've got a team that does not have enough talent. You got a team with some issues, obviously, that with scheme and play calling. And then the final part of it is a quarterback that right now is suffering from something. Some combination of elements. One, he's hurt. Two, he's not confident. Three, he's unhappy. Four, he doesn't have guidance. And I don't take it lightly the fact that he lost one of his best friends, mentors, and mental skills coach, Trevor Moad, right at the beginning of this year. I'm sure that's been hard for him.
Yep.
I feel for him on that. And I think all of these things, first of all, I don't know what combination it is with Russ. The finger's obviously not right. I mean, he can't throw accurately. That's not Russell Wilson. So he's definitely still hurt. He definitely is suffering from some sort of an indecisiveness in a way I've never seen. He's making the wrong reads in ways we've never seen before. He doesn't look like himself. He doesn't sound like himself. He doesn't sound happy, right? You heard Pete after the game say that the ball's not going where it's supposed to, and also mention the fact that the film doesn't lie. That's not Russell Wilson. Those aren't things that we associate with Russ. So there's clearly something going on there. And rather than continuing to debate which is the problem, they're all true. They're all true at the same time. All of those things are true at the same time. They are having issues right now with their scheme. their play calling, their offensive philosophy, identity, etc. They are. You watch it. That doesn't look like NFL offense. Russell's clearly hurt. That's not Russell Wilson. Russell's in his own head. That's not Russ. Right? All of those things. And talent-wise, I don't think they're as good as most teams they play. I don't know if I could use that excuse last night, though. Right? I mean, like, I think the Seahawks have a talent gap in general, which prevents them from being able to dominate games. But I didn't watch that game last night and think like, oh, man, they're not nearly as talented as Washington. Well, J.D. McKissick and, like, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some guys on that team. I love Scary Terry. What a great nickname. That's the best nickname right now in the NFL.
Scary Terry?
Yeah, Scary Terry is a great nickname.
How did I not hear that nickname?
That's Terry McLaurin. Yeah.
Oh, no, I did not hear that nickname.
Let's talk to the coach. I don't know if we're... are we running the open more, or are we just jumping right into this? All right, let's run the open.
The Pete Carroll Show. The first word from the Seahawks head coach every Monday at 9:30 with Mike Salk. Brought to you by Pizza Hut on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Well, and here we are with Coach Carroll. Coach, good morning. Thanks for jumping on after a long flight and a long night, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're here for you, Mike.
Well, I appreciate that. What, you know, in general, what happened yesterday?
Well, you know, it's a little bit more of the same that we've seen, you know, kind of the big numbers and stuff, you know, the time of possession stuff and the third down stuff that's been showing up. It's really amazing to me that I thought they played really well. And did things, you know, with kind of a good continuity for themselves, and they were fortunate to get out of there. You know, you look at the whole thing, all the stuff that we can talk about on our side, and then all the stuff you'd be talking about the positive on the other side. And it's a 2-point ball game, and really, I know they didn't have their kicker and stuff. That's a little bit of a differential there for them, but as it was all came down, it was right down to the nub of it, and we really felt like we were going to win the game. You know, maybe not deserving it or something in some sense, but we were right there, you know, for a lot of good reasons, you know, because the things that happened on the defensive side and guys kept the score down and kept hanging tough. Meanwhile, we're kind of waiting on the offense to get rolling.
Well, let's start there. Let's start with your defense. We'll come back around to the offense here in a minute. But what has been the mentality of this defense?
They're really striving to capture, you know, our mentality, which is aggressive and play to the nature of our guys, and that Bobby and Brooksy do their thing, and Quandre and Jamal do their thing, and the big guys in the middle, you know, just play off of all of that and count on that to be a winning formula for us. And, you know, it was I think that we were playing well enough that we could have really had a big night on defense. And we just needed the help from the O, and that would have made a difference. You know, we just needed some more drives to happen, and we need fewer plays because we played a lot of really good stuff last night.
What was the vibe of this game for you as you're going through? I mean, did it feel like one of these close games you've described where you feel like you're in it all the way? You mentioned that, you know, maybe you, quote, didn't quite deserve it. Did it feel like it was getting away from you, but the scoreboard wasn't? Was there a desperation with this team trying to hang on to a playoff spot?
Like, I don't know, we didn't deserve it. I don't know if that, maybe I just said that, but I don't know if that's the way I would phrase it. It was, we played really tough. We had so many big hits in this game. So many individual guys had huge hits in the game that just showed how everybody was connected, you know, and we were playing physically. I'm talking about the defensive now, and in special teams also, you know, that was what you saw. And it was kind of highlighted the performance. We were in it the whole time. Yeah, it was one of those games we were in it the whole time. And as here we are with the chance, you know, if we just stop them at the end there, we'll get a shot at it. And sure enough, that's exactly how it went. And we put together that, you know, that fantastic last drive from the 4-yard line, and we're there. Even when in a drive that was challenged too, and we got sacked in the drive, we didn't hit everything, you know, and still the clock, no timeouts. So we just did a really, you know, the kind of job that we were used to doing. And Russ got us down the field, and guys made the catches, and the protection was enough. And we took a big sack in that drive too, that usually could cancel you out, but it didn't. So there was a continued sense of believing, Mike, and our guys really feel like we're going to win the game. And we're not happy with the way it's going. We know it could be different, but that nature, that makeup of the guys in that locker room is really special, and it's really why it's so frustrating that we're not receiving, you know, more of the fun and all the good stuff that comes with winning.
Coach, how would you assess Russ's night?
I think we saw Russ, you know, make some incredible plays, and in throws, and then some throws that are really routine for him not be completed. And there was, he missed the first third down play when the ball took off on him, and there was a couple other ones on third down situations where really we didn't need to do anything different. We just needed to throw and catch it. And I think we're seeing him, he's got his feeling for throwing the football and all that, but there's plays that are getting away from us, three or four plays in that game that really are normal plays for him to make. And so and the hard part about that is during the week, we're seeing him throw the ball great and all that. And in the game, just for one reason or another, it's just not as clean as we need to be. We need to protect better. We need to keep the guys out of his chops right in front of him a couple times. We got knocked back, and so that he has the room to throw. But that's what I've just seen him hit more stuff, and that's just what's a little uncommon about it.
Yeah, I think we're all wondering about the accuracy. I mean, that's something that is one of his specialties. One of the things that has made Russ as great as he's been here for the last decade. Is it finger? Is it finger related in terms of not being able to grip it? Is it mentality?
I don't know that, Mike. I can't tell you that because he feels fine and he feels great. That's how he's felt during the week. And also there's fantastic touch plays, down the field and on the move and on the big plays, to Tyler again. That's the last couple weeks. He's gorgeous throws, and so I do feel like some of the throws that he drives, when he's throwing the ball right on the line and kind of the darts that he's got to throw in there. But look at the touchdown pass. It was freaking great, so that there's just that little bit that's not as clean as it's been. And we just got to keep helping him. We got to keep doing things. And we'll try to get guys more open and all that. But really, we just got to throw and catch it and make our stuff happen. And our guys got to come through when the time comes because the margin for error is very slight when we're not as complete as we've been. We didn't run the ball well tonight, and we did block some plays well, but there just wasn't enough of them and enough to build on. And that is all part of what the scheme is. I think for the fans, it was pretty clear. You could see how they were able to play against us. They dinked the ball around a little bit. They had three explosive plays in the game. Out of all those plays, we had four out of those few plays. And they were able to run the football with enough to keep it going. They averaged 3.5 yards a carry, which we would think was not a successful night of running the football, but because of the opportunities, I think they showed you that's what we're kind of used to seeing, and it's a good winning formula, but man, the margin was really slight the way it went.
You mentioned last night that after the game, Russell was quietly accountable, I believe was your phrase so that he spoke quietly and took accountability for what happened last night. What does that mean? What does that look like?
He just said, he's got to play better to him. And he told him, he said, I got to do better. And guys know, they don't have to say a lot. It's not a lot of words. It's just the sincerity and the care, that he brought to it. It was heartfelt. And he's doing everything you can do. He's staying up late. He's getting up early. He's practicing hard. He's staying after practice. He's getting the reps, the whole thing. He's doing everything he can do. And that's – everybody should understand that. That's really clear. And we're seeing the work ethic, during the week that he has, and he's doing everything possible to be there for us. And he, just wants to just be a little bit better, and we need to be better around him. We need to block a little better, all that stuff to complement, what he's doing, because everybody's working hard. And that's what makes it so difficult, because we're putting in a spirited, upbeat, forward-thinking focus to work every week, and that's it's been common for us, and that's the only way we know how to do it. So it's really frustrating that we're not getting the results.
Coach, we talked last week a little bit about Shane Waldron, and you said he was in the midst of everything. At this point, what can he do as the offensive coordinator to help improve this offense?
Well, like I said, we were open, We got open on plays, and so we were there available. And that means that the call, the scheme, the prep, all that stuff, guys were where they needed to get, and we needed to just find our way to convert. I don't know that we dropped any balls tonight. I don't remember, not catching a football, we didn't get any balls knocked down, over at the line of scrimmage. So there's we just need to come through and convert, and everybody needs to contribute to that.
Just so I understand, and you know, just trying to understand the role of the coordinator and what that job entails. What is the primary responsibility of a coordinator?
It's orchestrating the whole effort. You know, it's everything. It's making sure that, you know, all of the process is well organized in gathering the information, making the choices and the decisions as we put together a plan. You know, utilizing the coaches that what they have, utilizing the players and what they have to offer, and it's like the word, the coordinate, you know, bring all of that together, and then he has to execute the game and get out there and call the thing in accordance with how we prepared it, and hopefully it's in sync and it makes sense and you know, we didn't go off the rails in some direction that we, you know, that we didn't prepare for, and you know, we're not doing that. We're doing the game plans the way we'd like to do them. We're looking at the opportunities the way we want to look at them, and you know, and we have to adapt. He has to adapt to what's happening as we see the week unfold. He has to adapt what's happening in the game. All of that is what is called upon for the guys that are making the calls.
You mentioned the last drive there, and the success that you guys had in the 2-minute drill. Is there something there to build on? Is that momentum? I mean, when you turn back to the team and now that you've watched the film, do you focus on some of the positive and say, you know, it's in there obviously somewhere?
Yes. Yeah, the answer is yes to that. We're going to show these guys what they're capable of always, and so that we can keep reminding them, you know, and so that we know who we are and what we're doing, what we can count on. I mean, we've been a terrific 2-minute team for years, you know, and that's never not been a strength. And so for us to do that, like Russ said to me as he's heading out, you know, we've done this before. You know, that was the last thing he said is he went into the huddle, and which is the typical positive outlook that, you know, that he's maintained for, you know, a long, long time. And that's the confidence, you know. Well, you know, one of the things is, Mike, when you try to figure out who you are, and then when you know who you are, then you try to bring that to the party, you know, there's an old saying we got that we learned from Rick Barry from a million years ago. You know, if you know you're a great shooter and you miss your first 10 shots, look out. You know, and that's kind of how we operate. And so we're still in that lookout. You know, it hasn't turned yet, and so we keep believing, and that's how we battle, and that's kind of at the root of all of the mentality that keeps us coming back.
I know the running game is important to you and the circle of toughness and the way the philosophy works together. You mentioned a few minutes ago that it wasn't great last night. What does that need to get going, that portion of your game?
Well, we need more turns. We just need more reps. We need more opportunities, you know, because we're running the play passes and stuff off of it, even though we haven't had a lot of turns, you know, to get successful. You got to make first downs. You make first downs, you get more chances, you get to keep calling them, you know, and like I said, look at the illustration that we saw from the other team. They ran the ball 43 times last night, and they averaged 3 yards, 3.5 yards a carry. Well, that gives you the rhythm that allows you to set up the passes and the play passes and the opportunities to make the big plays that are you know, the big guns can make outside. So, you know, that's you know, I think it's interesting too that it's kind of coming out. I've heard a couple different commentaries about, you know, there's a lot of teams that are being successful right now. They're running the football well. Well, you know, there was a time a couple of years ago that, you know, or maybe it's always been the case since we've been here, that people questioned, you know, my commitment to the running game. Well, that's never changed, and it's because the game isn't different in that regard. Oh, everybody's got to throw for 400 yards a game. No, you don't. You got to win, you know, and you got to do the things right so that you have the chance to do that. And the running game is at the heart of all of that for many reasons. We don't need to go into all that, but I don't think the illustration could be more obvious, and that's you know, we're always shooting for that kind of balance.
Is it, you know, as you try to figure out what's going on there? You mentioned that it's not enough reps, but, you know, at some point, is it line related? Is it running back related? I mean, is it scheme related or creativity? You know, what can you point to say, hey, if this was working better, the running game would work better?
Well, I do think that when you have your, you know, your lead dog running back, that it makes a difference, and it makes a difference on how you, you know, in every aspect of the complementary part of the running game and the passing game, you know, and you go back to when and I don't want to make a big excuse that Chris isn't here, but Chris has been that guy for us. And we've always hoped that Rashad Penny will come through and be that guy for us. And we've had a 1-2 thought for a lot of years. And we're seeing Alex do everything he can to try to help us out. And we mixed in DJ a little bit tonight. But go back to the image of what it was like back in the day, you know, when we were putting this program together, and Marshawn was such a big part of it. That was it. It wasn't all that he did. It was just the fit of it all. And you know, when that guy's there, you give him the ball because he's that guy, and that's what Chris always has been. And so it seems to me that we haven't been able to get back into that kind of groove where the play caller knows he's got that guy that we can keep pounding away, and sticking with it is the right thing to do. And so we're trying to develop our guys to become that, but it just has that's the sense you have when you do know what you got. And I think it was really clear. I thought their guy, you know, Gibson was really good tonight, and he was really sharp. And then they went 1-2 punch with McKissick, and they had a real nice rhythm with those guys, which they have had for about a month of their season now, and it's made them come to life.
Big news in the last couple days here with Lincoln Riley heading to USC. Do you reach out when there's a new USC coach? Do you talk to those guys? Is that part of like being USC coach emeritus?
Well, no, I haven't talked to Lincoln. You know, I met Lincoln when he came and visited us a couple years ago, but I've really had, you know, high regard for what he's done, and you know, whenever I had kind of any opportunity to talk about him and what I thought of him, you know, I did, you know, so I think that's a great hire for them. I think he's a marvelous, young, vibrant dude that's going to do a really nice job. He's got his act together, and he's got a lot that he brings with him, and they recognize that, and they went after it, you know, you got to give him credit. They went for one of the highest kind of touted guys in the country, and they talked to a number of candidates, I'm sure, and to get Lincoln to go to the Trojan program, that's a big deal for them.
It's probably good for the conference also, right? To have you, when USC is good, the Pac-12 is usually good.
Well, that's kind of how we thought. Yeah. So it's good. It's really good. And you know, there's a lot of success to be had there. You know, obviously we know that, and I wish him the very best.
Coach, it dawns on me that a couple times you've said tonight in talking about the game, which means you obviously haven't slept yet. So most of us have had the opportunity to sleep and all of that. I know Russ has no time for it, but maybe at some point you'll get a chance to catch a few minutes. We'll let you go. We appreciate you coming right in off the plane, and we'll talk next week.
You got it, Michael. I appreciate you getting up early, too.
No, Coach, I do it every day. I have to get up. This is my job. I have to wake up at this time. It's terrible. Let's switch jobs.
Okay. You want to try this one, huh?
Well, I got some ideas. I mean, you know, I'm happy. It starts with Big Nickel, as you know. It's always Big Nickel for me.
There you go.
Coach, thank you. We'll talk next week.
Big Nickel showed up this week.
I know. Ryan Neal's been pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
You laughed at me about Big Nickel, and now you use it all the time. I just figure you got it from me.
It was because of the distance you had from really understanding what you were saying.
That's pretty much every day. There's no reason to limit that just to the Big Nickel.
All right. Well, you're on. We finally heard you.
All right, Coach. Thanks. We appreciate it. There you go. There's Pete Carroll taking some time, jumping right off the plane to talk this morning. I'd be obviously going to react to a lot of what we heard. It's a big day. Mariners make a huge signing yesterday with Robbie Ray. The Huskies are going to sign their new coach. They'll announce that later today in a press conference. I want to react to a lot of what we heard there with Pete, and most specifically, look, you ask him about Shane Waldron, what he can do to improve the offense, and his answer is, the guys are open. I don't know how much more simply he can put it.
It's true.
What can Shane Waldron do to help the offense?
Sure,
the
open.
Guys are open, is Pete Carroll's answer. More next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.